Hello and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest this episode is Gina Panayiotou. Gina is an ESG strategist with a background in maritime law and an MBA focused on change management and ethical leadership. She's held senior roles mainly within ship-owning organisations and has founded a consultancy firm, Oceans Arena, aimed at leading industry stakeholders through their transformational ESG journey from strategy formulation to brand positioning. She's currently leading the global ESG strategy at West of England P&I Club. Gina has also acted as communications consultant at the IMO UNEP Norway Innovation Forum. Based in London, she is the UK chair of the G100 Network Sustainable Brand Creation and Marketing, the secretary of Wista UK, and the co-chair of Wista International Environment Committee. She also supports the World Ocean Council as an associate on law and ocean sustainable development, and is an associate tutor at MLA College. Gina has been featured among the top maritime influencers you should follow by Marine Traffic, shortlisted for the Inspirational Influencer Awards at the Global Impact category for her work on youth and female empowerment, leading the initiative Brand Women as Leaders, aimed at helping women build their personal brand to shine for success. She's also been ranked by Legal 500, GC Powerlist Greece and Cyprus as one of the top 100 in-house counsel driving innovation within their sector. She's been featured in the top 100 women in shipping list for 4 consecutive years and successfully hosts a broadcast Oceans Arena stage, which is committed to branding the industry that makes the world go round, and has recently been appointed UK ambassador of Sea Trade Maritime Club. So Gina is clearly incredibly experienced in ESG and in branding and in the maritime industry. So it's a delight to have her on to talk about, in particular, what the P&I industry and ESG roles are within maritime at the moment. Gina, hi, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on.
Hi, Mark. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, you're very welcome. We've been hoping to have someone from your side of the industry come on and speak for some time. But for those who don't know you, perhaps you could just take a moment to introduce yourself and your role at West.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Gina Panayiotou. I'm the ESG manager at West of England, P&I Club, the Maritime Insurance Organization. Of course, and I joined them almost about a year ago to set up the ESG function and their ESG strategy. So that's environmental, social, and governance. And I focus both on our internal operations and the support with our members. And I also represent the club on the International Group Sustainability Committee.
Thanks for that. And in your role, you don't just cover the E part of ESG, the decarbonization element, but also the S, social, and the G, governance elements.
Exactly. And I look forward to explaining a bit more how everything falls together.
Perhaps we might go through the topics one by one in this conversation, but let's start with your view on what you think are the most challenging aspects for the shipping industry, for maritime, in terms of the EBIT of the decarbonization process, please.
Yeah, that is the most frequently asked question, and I would say it is the most challenging. Obviously, when it comes to maritime, there's some technical challenges there, but there's also challenges like maybe culture and mindset, but I'll focus more on the technical for now. So one of the greatest issues that we have as an industry is that our fleet is so diverse. There's so many types of vessels out there. And I think even if me and you at this moment tried to figure out how many there are, it would be very difficult to come up with a number, which is slightly different to aviation, which you probably could calculate the type of aircrafts flying in the sky. So starting off with that, it makes it very difficult to find a decarbonization strategy that fits, one that fits for all, or regulation actually that fits for all. And then, of course, you come onto the cost and the fact that it's such a capital-intensive sector where investments really need to factor in a life cycle of 35-plus years. So there's not really much flexibility to experiment or just take any risk lightly. And you also need to consider your fleet strategy when it comes to existing vessels who have, you know, just been built or have another 10, 20 good years of life. So there's great uncertainty in that respect. And another thing that you need to take into consideration is what the stakeholders will be factoring in, such as finances, insurance, P&I, when you decide what you're going to be building or how you're going to be adjusting your vessels for this decarbonization process. So quite a few challenges there. And it may be common sense that a more environmentally friendly vessel, for example, in the long term will be performing better and it will be safer, etc. But many of these solutions are new. They haven't been tried and tested. So that's quite important. And a final challenge on the technical side would, of course, be infrastructure and the availability of fuels. And each and every owner will have a slightly different, unique decarbonization strategy. So an infrastructure that is at the moment lacking behind needs to be developed to accommodate all of these strategies. And on a very final note, because I did mention there are some challenges on mindset and cultures, and I think it's an important part. Leadership is an important part of this transition journey. Clearly, we are a very crucial industry to the world. 90% of world trade comes by sea. So predominantly, the industry is very traditional in what it does. When it comes to change, again, you have to be a bit risk averse. So we have been very reactive rather than proactive. And this really needs a shift of mindset to embrace diversity and inclusion and talent retention and all of these factors that do make for a very robust ESG strategy, because the only way forward is by innovating, and innovating needs creativity and cultures that foster and attract talent.
That innovation element is a challenging one across ESG for shipping, isn't it? Because sometimes we joke that shipping is the second oldest industry on the planet. And shipping has always done things in a particular way. You know, we don't just have shipping exceptionalism, but we have shipping traditionalism that we face. Shipping does things in particular ways because those are the ways that work.
Exactly.
And so it's not always easy to bring innovation to that. How do you, in your role, sort of help with that innovation and that leadership element?
So through the role at West and our strategy, we kind of try to support our members through this journey, because as I mentioned earlier, it's very challenging. It's going to be very different for every owner. So you need to kind of understand what they are comfortable in doing, what direction they want to follow, and then try and facilitate that journey and make it as safer as possible, mitigate any risks, provide them with the expertise, and actually as a P&I club, be ahead of the game. Like, you really need to have industry experts in your organization who will be able to advise members and be aware of new technologies, new regulations, new type of vessels, even what how to handle new fuels, what training your crew will require. So with all this, with the innovation that's required to lead this decarbonization journey, from our side, what we need to do is be very proactive and have those industry experts who are trained and stay ahead of the curve all the time to be able to feed into our members than what they need to be doing, not what they need to be doing, but rather how they can be doing it most efficiently with the lowest possible risk. So that's quite important. And that's what we're trying to, and we are doing at West, having this team that can really support the members with these diverse paths of exploring innovative solutions.
Okay, thanks. Talking about sort of decarbonization within the whole ESG frame, where do you position decarbonization within ESG? Is this just a moral case, or is there a commercial case for this?
So a lot of people do have this misconception that it's just a moral case, and it is a moral case, but there is a very powerful business case to this. Decarbonization is obviously a key element of the ESG strategy. it would be a risky exercise. And I say this a lot to kind of set it apart from the rest, because one does really feed in and support each other. But obviously, with climate action having the most pressing deadline, with this great amount of regulatory pressures and increased pressures, decarbonization will remain a primary focus with all the challenges that we discussed earlier surrounding it. So I touched upon embracing talent earlier, and this is where it ties in with the rest of the aspects of ESG, because it's really imperative to have that strategy there if you're going to be reaching these targets on climate goals, etc. Decarbonizing your operations really does mean, you know, skilled, healthy, safe workforce, well-trained crew. So, for example, it is one thing for your ESG strategy to formulate, you know, fleet and operation, how you operate as a company, what are you building, where you're recycling, and all the rest. But it's also very important to have a holistic approach to ESG to attract that talent, that gender equality in your organization, that will be able to reflect and carry out this decarbonization strategy, because without the right people, you can't really carry it out. So yeah, it's a strong business case, because truly, if companies fail to comply and to successfully illustrate also, because it affects your brand, how they're managing this increased regulatory environmental risk, they will be subject to fines, reputational damages, less attractive to financiers, less attractive to talent, and all of that clearly, you know, make for a successful business.
Yes, yes. We talked a little bit about the S there, about the social elements, about, you know, the importance of crew welfare and crew well-being. We had Stephen Jones on as a podcast guest recently from the Seafarers Happiness Index. How much does the P&I industry support that kind of agenda, the seafarer welfare and health element?
I think the P&I industries have always been quite proactive when it comes to this and have taken a great stance, I mean, through the loss prevention departments to carry out and support members understanding how they can be better when it comes to supporting their crew, physical and mental health, their safety, and all the rest. And I think during COVID, we saw an emphasis on this and a focus on this. It came further up on the agenda. And as a part of the international group, this has been given great focus on how we can make ships a better workplace for seafarers, how we can be making them happier, and what a new generation of seafarer needs, and how to keep them healthier. And I mean, it makes sense also for P&Is to be very interested in this, because it means healthier people on board, it means safer oceans. So it's something that it's quite important to us as a sector.
Let's think a little bit about the G side, the governance side, if we might. There's the commercial case for the way shipping is governed at the moment. So we have offshore incorporation, we have international registries, brass plate companies, special purpose vehicles or single purpose vehicles, you know, single ship owning companies. There's probably still companies out there with bearer shares, for all I know. There is a sort of move towards greater transparency globally across different kinds of industry and different professions. Can you see that coming for shipping?
It will have to come. That's I think that's the most accurate answer to your question. We're seeing, you know, increased regulation on ESG, increased standards for reporting from the European Union, the IMO reassessing their agenda. Of course, okay, the IMO reassessing the agenda on decarbonization, but there's other regulations coming into force. A great shift will probably, and I think a great impact will be made from this ESG reporting standard. And it's really highlighting the governance aspect and transparency. And further to that, another driver of this is, of course, the financing institutions, which we've seen the Poseidon principles of for financing, where the largest banks have taken a stance already on this. So it's definitely going to be the way forward for all industries and maritime. And we're going to have to find a way to go in that direction and be more transparent and remain attractive to financing, to talent, and adhering with all the compliance rules.
Yeah. Now, shipping, of course, is still, I would say the majority of ships are still owned by privately held companies. They're not publicly listed on stock markets, or they're not state-owned enterprises.
Just to add, I mean, the European directive, for example, it affects more or less any companies of any size. Okay, some of the smaller ones can be exempt. But I think which such a big push towards this, even if you're not required by law to take action in that respect, everything else will, your consumers will be, your end client will be requiring, your stakeholders will be requiring it. So it's just the only way that it can move forward.
Well, I was going to ask exactly that in a way, which was how a private company is going to adopt or adapt to the new regulatory landscape.
So it is a very heightened reporting standard, and it's phased out depending on the size of the organization, of course. But that doesn't discriminate between private and public listed entities. So I think that would definitely be a great force of change in that direction.
So there's a lot to be do. There's a lot to be done. There's a, whether it's on environmental or social or governance aspects, you know, there's the transparency agenda being driven by the EU, as you say. You know, the social agenda perhaps applies in terms of diversity and inclusion more to shoreside than to seafaring staff, because seafaring is still quite hard physical labor. And the environmental strategy, the environmental change applies to everybody. So we all have to have strategies for that. So thinking about your role in P&I industry, how can the P&I clubs, what's the role of P&I clubs in supporting this sort of threefold agenda?
Well, I always start with this. I think that all corporations have a very important role to play in this agenda, in the decarbonization agenda. At West, you know, running our business on a more sustainable basis and supporting our members, as I mentioned earlier, putting a lot of focus into that is really paramount, because we are helping shape this sustainable maritime industries of tomorrow, and it's a great responsibility. As a P&I club, I touched upon this earlier, we really need to be, our role is to offer that support, to be proactive, to be able to help ship owners as much as we can and stakeholders navigate through this journey, whether it be advising them and staying ahead of the game when it comes to regulation, what's coming up, what's around the corner, what training your crew should be undergoing, and all the rest. So that's one of the key elements. And then the second one, I think it's also inspiring our members through our own actions to be doing better when it comes to this, because clearly as a P&I club, it's very different from an owner. You can't really formulate or police their decarbonization strategy, right? You're there to support them. But by setting and leading by example, it's quite important to us. I think it's about giving them those options and the understanding and awareness to navigate through this transition. And I mentioned earlier that I sit on the IG Group's, International Group Sustainability Committee, which is working as a collaborate effort with all the other clubs to kind of shape and help shape the direction of where P&I is sitting when it comes to all elements of P&I. So P&Is do have a very important role to play, I think, in facilitating its member transition journeys and really developing those foundations for a safer and stronger maritime industry.
Great, thank you for that. I think there's an awful lot to be done, more than we can ever envisage completing in one podcast. And we're coming to the end of our allotted time anyway. But if people want to find out more, presumably there's easy means of contacting you these days. So what's the best way for people to get in touch if they want to follow up this conversation?
Well, they can definitely find my details on West's website or on my LinkedIn profile. My name is exactly as I introduced myself, so Gina Panayotou. And I also share a lot of content related to ESG. So if they want to follow and drop me a DM for any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Very good. Well, Gina, thanks so much for coming on. It's been great to have you on the show. And thank you to everybody out there in listener land, and tune in again soon for the next episode of the Ship.Energy podcast.
been a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Mark Williams from Cambridge signing off. Thanks and goodbye.